Hello, this is Melissa. It is Real History on August the 22nd, 2024, and I'm here today with Neil Foster. Hey, Neil. How are you?
How are you?
I'm okay.
I'm good. I'm suffering a bit from hay fever, so I'm a bit stuffed up and sniffy, but there you go. If I lapse into about a sneeze, you can always cut it out.
Okay. Well, that is it. What's going on down there? Growing or in the air?
Oh, there's a lot of grass cutting going on. But I had to cut mine yesterday, so that didn't help. So there you go. Such is life.
Yeah. Well, you have sent me a lot, and then we were unable to record last month, so we haven't talked in a while. So I think we should just dive in and cover some ground.
Yeah. Okay. Where do you want to start?
Oh.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've got Walgreens up in front of me here.
Okay.
So we'll start with that. Walgreens selected for 25 million COVID vaccine study. So all those people that went in for their shots, I wonder if they were told that all their information was going to be gathered and they were going to put into a study. I wonder what it is they're actually studying. Are they studying to see what batches are doing what to people? And will this information be passed on to insurance companies, do you think?
Well, does it say what they're studying?
Well, clinical trial sites are going to be used as to assess the effectiveness of the FDA author. Well, they've already been proven to be totally ineffective. So why do they need to study it? They've been proven to be unsafe and ineffective. Even in the words of Tony Fraudsey, you know, he's come out and said they weren't effective. This one of the pharma CEOs came out and said, well, we knew all along that they would be effective, blah, blah, blah. So what were they for, do people think? If they weren't effective at that, they were effective for something else, right?
Right.
They're honoured to be selected, of course, for this important study, as this is a step forward to utilise public and private partnerships. There we go. To bring clinical trials into more communities across the country. In other words, vaccines, it's all going to be privatised. And the public's going to pay all the compensation if they ever get around to giving people it before they die.
You know, I think that this is, of everything that you've sent me recently, and I started to gather up all of the links, and there is so much going on right now with the vaccines and the identification, or they're not really calling them passports now, but proof of vaccination. And there's European vaccination card.
Yeah. Will be piloted in 5 countries. Latvia, Greece, Belgium, Germany and Portugal. From this next month, actually. Clearly, they're not... this isn't for your past vaccination. They want to see who's taken this particular poison. That's what they're looking for, because they don't really care about the rest of them. They're just cash cows on the childhood schedule, and they got the COVID onto the childhood schedule, so they don't have to worry about liability anymore at all. So now, of course, they want to find out who's vaccinated against this thing, who's had their mRNA injections, and who's not. You know. So who they can track and trace and who they can't through the so-called vaccinations. And it brought to mind that TV series, The Last Enemy.
Yes.
I think that's exactly what we're looking at here. You walk through a scanner, they'll know whether you've had this stuff or not.
This is what I've been thinking about recently. We haven't heard much about whatever this next thing is going to be. I don't think that they're going to be making Mpox the next big global scare.
But they've got a shot for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, nobody fell for it the first time, and nobody's going to fall for it this time. Well, the vast majority aren't going to fall for it, I don't think. But they're actually saying that your pets could catch it. Well, my dog's never been to Africa. You know, so what's he going to catch it from? If it's coming from animals in Africa.
Is your dog gay?
Well, you know what dogs are like. They do like an old butt sniff now and again. They're not really fussy if it's a female or a male, but that's probably for something completely different that you don't understand. But no, I don't think he is. I think he likes the girls. Even if he was, he's never been to Africa to meet another gay dog. So I don't see how that's possible. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't go to the zoo. So they're going to go after your pets now to get this stuff in. And my dog's not had any shots at all, so he's quite healthy. And he's not going to be getting any.
I'm still looking at this one that you sent me from Vaccines Today from the EU. And I think that there's a little bit in there where they personalize it. They're telling you about Anna, the 27-year-old nurse, and said,
yeah,
27-year-old nurse who recently moved from Brumaria to Morvania with her family in her new country. Now, what did they say here? All names and places are fictional, right? Just in case you're looking on the map for a place called Brumaria. In her new country, Anna needs to provide her vaccination history to comply with local regulations. Using the European Vaccination Card, the EVC, Anna can seamlessly transfer her records. She goes online, creates an EVC account with the provider of her choice, and enters her vaccination data from Brumaria. She also needs to create an EVC for her son, Lucas. She sets up his EVC using her account, transferring information from his paper child health book. Both EVCs are then validated by her doctor, an authorized EVC health professional in Brumaria. This digital record becomes accessible via her smartphone, simplifying the process of sharing it with healthcare providers. Now, this is a simple thing. It goes on to talk about her parents. So, in other words, it's showing you that the whole family's information can be accessed on one person's card.
Well, it's reminiscent of the IBM punch card system, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And
it's the same thing.
I was looking at that thinking that this is how they're going to... right there is your template for the marketing campaign.
Yeah. And it's a Dr. Mueller, so we're talking about Germany, right?
Yes.
Let's make no pretense here, the biggest country in Europe. We're talking about Germany. And that's one of the countries for the test, of course. But they make it sound very complicated. You've got to do this with a card, you've got to do this, and then it's accessible. Yes. Well, you know, let's just make it all digital. We don't need this paperwork. We don't need to be bothering with that. Mm-hmm. And it actually ends up at that scenario where it's on a smartphone, so she doesn't have to do it again. It's all done. It's all digital. Going back to the last seminar, there we are. You're walking through with your smartphone. It's probably telling the authorities as you walk through the scanner whether you've had it or not. And everything else. Everything else, your banking records, the whole lot.
Yeah.
You know. It's seamless.
It is. It's seamless. That's a good marketing word. The last enemy, about 12
BBC,
years
I
old.
Think.
12 years old now, right?
Around that, yeah. I don't have the deal in here. You could look it up.
It's worth it. This is one that Alan said you should watch this every couple of years.
Yeah, I've watched it a few times. Basically the premise of it is I think it starts off in Africa, doesn't it?
And
somebody's husband disappears. And there's an incredibly stupid love story in it, which is just...
Oh, it's...
Nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go on.
Besides the digital ID that recognizes you when you walk through a door and has access to all of your records, the thing that Alan really liked about that one is it shows what we know that they can do, and they have done, and they've tested widely, is what was going on there in Africa at the beginning, where they are doing ethnic-specific warfare with a vial.
Yep.
That's important. That's why if you've got your Walgreens test that you're participating in, they're going to know when you received the vaccination, everything about you, your family history, all of this, and they're just making notes. How does this work?
Yeah, and they're probably going to know in advance what did. Well, you know, they've come along and said, "Oh, we can do tests on you to see if you're susceptible to this or that disease." Blah blah blah. Well, if they going along with the Walgreens study, as if they'd not be doing that all along, maybe they can tell by the batch exactly what you're going to come down with in the future, so they don't have to test you. They're like, "Oh, we'll just scan you. Oh yeah, you're going to have cancer next week." Because we're going to give you it.
Yeah.
You know? Switching on this and that, whatever they put inside you, they can switch on and off and cause any sort of health problem that you may be susceptible to or not.
Yes.
I would imagine. As you say, ethnic specific or not, if they can make it ethnic specific, then they can make it disease specific.
That's true. The other sinister thing about this is this is predictive programming, and they're also telling you, this isn't really a hypothetical, it says, consider the example, but this is what they're doing. It said that you will need to visit your doctor who is an authorized EVC health professional. Now, if you were to not read that as an acronym, that's nonsensical. So he's an authorized European vaccination card health professional. I mean, doesn't that sound ridiculous?
Yeah, but what? So somebody who's not authorized to deal with this stuff hasn't been paid off.
Well, it also tells me that, you know, it paid off indeed, but I think a lot of doctors will find themselves shut out of the system if they don't agree to go along.
Yeah, I think very soon any doctor that doesn't give vaccinations will be struck off.
Yes.
I don't know how doctors can't see that coming, to be honest.
Yes.
Any doctor that's not giving shots should be very worried about their job. They'll lose their license for being for professional misconduct, they'll call it. Never in the ear of AI doctors, right?
Right. Yeah.
Online doctors, which we're already in. I mean, this scenario here, they've painted where you've got to actually physically go to the doctor. I don't think that's relevant either. It'll all be done online. And you won't even know if you're talking to a doctor. It's an authorised bot, I guess. Because they don't seem to have to have any medical qualifications for this. All he's doing is collecting data. It doesn't have to be a doctor, does it?
No.
It could be somebody sitting behind a switchboard in China, Russia, New Zealand, anywhere, doing this online. You would know. They could put on the accent for you.
I like the way they, I shouldn't say I like the way, it's clever, the way they move you into privatization without calling it that. It said the EVC empowers individuals like Anna to take control over their own vaccination records, revolutionizing vaccination management and ensuring a healthier future for all Europeans. This citizen-centered method of storing and sharing data, rather than relying solely on public health systems, was made possible by the Global Digital Health Certification Network.
Which has already been set up, right?
Yes.
But I haven't been told about that.
No.
And it was developed just like that during the COVID-19 pandemic for the EU Digital COVID Certificate. It's now managed by the World Health Organization, so we can trust them. Mm-hmm. We can trust our medical records in the hands of a known genocidal maniac. Who's just called monkeypox the next big thing?
I mean, none of this, to longtime listeners of Alan, who said probably 20 years ago, 18, 20 years ago, if you're not up to date on your vaccines, you walk into a grocery store and alarms will go off. You will not be allowed to shop.
I think that's coming.
Yeah. And what we're watching is the no dissenting voices. And this is I see parallels all the time between the vaccination insanity this depopulation method and what's going on in the religion of the cult of transgender. It's the same kind of thing. Health professionals now who don't go along with this are already having intervention by the state, by the licensing board. Mm-hmm. What they act as if is that there's scientific consensus when there's not. So dissenting voices are just shut down.
Well, I don't remember the public ever asking for any of this stuff.
No.
You know, so where's the public-private partnership coming? Where are the public involved?
Well, I think the deception of that marketing piece that we just looked at is that the citizen-based thing is privatization. Do you have control over where your data is stored? Is it on your, personal computer?
Well, as you say, your personal computer is not your personal computer,
no.
Is it?
No. So you can't say, oh, well, I've written down on a piece of paper every time I've been vaccinated. Here it is. No. Well, that's not efficient.
No. Well, it goes on to say that this other thing, EUVABECO, EUVABECO, is creating plans for several other innovative tools. And it's a clinical decision system. In other words, AI, right, is going to just give you a diagnosis over the internet that provides vaccination recommendations, a screening tool to identify and invite vulnerable populations. Well, anybody who's not had the shot is going to be identified, right, as vulnerable, in inverted commas. What happens if you decline their invitation? Like you say, are you going to get you're going to be tagged? Well, maybe just facial recognition. And as you walk into the supermarket, beep, 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 beep. Mm-hmm. That's it, you ain't getting in.
No.
An electronic product information leaflet, an e-pill, they call that. Well, there's another acronym if you've been paying attention to. An e-pill. In other words, that sounds like it's something to put in your body.
It does. Yeah.
To enable the transfer of vaccines across countries without having to repackage them. How's that possible? And a modelling and forecasting tool to assess the impact of public health interventions. Well, they're going to fly all these things all over the world, out of one place. By leveraging the lessons learned from the COVID-19 pandemic and fostering innovation in vaccination management, Europe is taking crucial steps towards a more resilient, there's that word, and health-secure future. Well, I'm quite secure with health, thanks very much. I don't need any help. I can look after myself. I'm an adult. I'm 61 years old. I've never been ill my whole adult life. You know, I've got a bit of hay fever just now, but there you go. That's just one of those things. But it's not going to floor me and kill me, and I'm not going to get a shot for it either. And I don't even take antihistamines or any of that rubbish either. I'll just get on with it. But leveraging the lessons learned from the COVID, that means taking advantage of. You know, we've all seen what they do in the money markets when they leverage things. That all end up in disaster. There we go. That's our future. And as you say, I think the next time they pull the pandemic scam, this stuff's all going to be active. And I can see the day coming where I'm walking up to the supermarket and they won't let me in. There's going to be trouble. Because it won't just be me. You know, they reckon up to between the official figures in the UK are 23% are unvaccinated. That's the official figures. So you can imagine it's closer to maybe 30 or 40%. Now, can you imagine not getting in the store, 40% of people?
And that's, that don't have any vaccination, 23%.
Yeah. COVID vaccination.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they haven't even had one shot. And there are another cadre who have only had one. And got sick with it and decided, no, I ain't taking any more. So, remember, you're not fully vaccinated until you've taken every shot they tell you to take. So even if you had five or six and there's a seventh one out there, you're still unvaccinated. So that percentage of 23% could end up as 60, 70%.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got a war on. Because people ain't going to put up with that. 70% of people ain't going to put up with not getting in the store to buy the food. hopefully. You never know. they might have mobile bug wagons that will come around your house. So, here's a bag of bugs for you. We know you can't get in the store. But don't worry. Mr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is thinking about the children in Gaza. He doesn't care that they're being bombed. He just wants them to get the polio shots.
Oh, can you believe that?
Yeah. Children in Gaza are now at risk of polio as well as bombs. We need a ceasefire now. I think the bombs are more of a risk than polio. We are sending 1 million polio vaccines into Gaza, but many people will die from preventable health threats, like being bombed, yeah? Unless we can quickly scale up aid delivery, says the WHO Director General. He's obviously very, very ignorant of the fact that Israel's stopping all the aid getting in. I wonder if the polio shots will make it, do you think? Wonder if they'll get through, because, well, they might do, because there might be something in them that will, do the same as the bombs are doing. I mean, 1 million polio vaccines, you'd be lucky if there's 1 million Palestinian children left to take them.
I mean, look at this. See, they've been stuck at the 39,000. I know that this article is now going on 3 weeks old, but they've been stuck at that 39,000 people killed for about 5 weeks now, I think. So they haven't been updated. We know it's more than that. It's more than the wounded.
Just look at the devastation, and they're saying there's only 10,000 missing. They've flattened the place. How many people are buried? I guarantee it's more than 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. You're talking about high-rise buildings with multiple families in them. Maybe, 200, 300, 400 people in one of these tower blocks, just flattened. Those people ain't surviving. Mm-mm. And they ain't getting them out of there in a hurry either. Maybe the only ones you're going to see coming out are the ones that were at the top, if they survived the fall, which I doubt as well.
But just think about this. This article is surreal. First of all, they tell us that the poliovirus was detected in wastewater samples in Gaza.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, really?
These guys go out to test the water while the bombs are dropping, are they?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Then it goes on to tell you No, it goes on to tell you everything else that's going on there. They've got diarrheal diseases, respiratory infections, hepatitis A, among other diseases, raging through Gaza. Nearly everyone in Gaza is facing acute food insecurity and catastrophic hunger. Thousands of children are malnourished, making them even more susceptible to disease. They don't have clean or safe drinking water. They have deteriorating sanitary conditions, but we've got to rush those polio vaccines in there.
Never mind that we've destroyed all the infrastructure, which is a crime against humanity.
Yes.
Never mind that. We've destroyed all the water treatment, all the electricity, all this stuff, and they admitted they were going to target those things live on television, and nobody gives a damn that that's a war crime.
No.
I don't hear this clown coming out and saying it's a war crime, but then he's used to war crimes. He's done them himself. There's no sympathy going to come out of that guy. But I would not be surprised if these polio shots get through, because maybe they're mRNA as well. Who knows? And they'll just finish the job. If they do have a ceasefire, they want to make sure they get these shots in them first, so they keep dying, I would suggest. But again, going after the thing that says susceptible to disease, about 2.3 million people live in the 365 square kilometre Gaza Strip. That was before they started bombing it. So there's not 2.3 million in there anymore. It's hard to get any accurate figures about how many are left, but when you see what they've done to the place, there's no way I'd say be lucky if there's 1.5 million left. Mm. This 39,000 people being killed, it's just garbage.
Yeah. Well,
they say there was 3,000 killed in the Twin Towers.
Yeah.
So, no. But, A million people have been relocated from Rafah to Khan Yunis and Deir al-Bala, where the polio samples were detected. Well, they bombed all those places as well when they have to tell them to move there.
You know, Neil, it goes on to say that it says repeatedly, we have seen polio thrive in places hit by conflict and instability. In 2017, in war-torn Syria, an outbreak of variant poliovirus, a mutated form of the wild virus that can spread in under-immunized populations, left 74 children paralyzed. Goes on to tell you about in Somalia, they've had a decade-long civil war that's resulted in the longest unbroken chain of variant poliovirus transmission globally. Honestly, this is such doublethink. It's crazy. So many, many thousands of children have died from bombing. And many, many thousands more have died from a variety of things that are the direct result of this bombing. But they're concerned about, oh, it could be as many as the 74 who were paralyzed in war-torn Syria. You see what I mean? It's just...
Yeah, absolutely, because they talk about 89,000 people wounded. That's mm-hmm. the official figures, which haven't been updated for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. How many of them are paralyzed?
Right.
It's going to be more than 74, right?
That's right.
It's going to be in the thousands.
It's an insane kind of double thank you, but this is the world that we live in. This is the bombardment of daily propaganda.
Well, I mean, it's the conditions in Gaza present the perfect breeding ground for disease to spread. No, it's a perfect slaughter ground,
yes,
which they've created. And if anybody thinks the WHO is concerned about the lives of these children and wants to stop them getting polio, they're off their head. Still at a stage where Bill Gates can't go back to India or he'll be arrested for paralysing 48,000 Indian children.
Yeah.
What about those children? That's way over 74. I'm not talking about them. But he's involved in this as well. Gabriel Jesus, who's the war criminal himself, wants to save children all of a sudden by vaccinating them instead of... he's saying there has to be a ceasefire. Well, he's part of the WHO, right? He's part of the United Nations. Why isn't he down to the United Nations saying, come on, stop this. I demand you stop this. Well, he's in a position of power, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Why can't he stand up and address all the delegates and say, right, this is going to stop today. That's it. Or else, Netanyahu's going to be dragged out of Israel to the court for these war crimes. You know, and there's still people in the so-called alternative media, you know, supporting Israel. I find it disgusting.
Oh, this is... I would say that a huge majority are...
Well, there's something wrong with them. I don't know how to describe it. They're just not interested in truth, are they?
Well, there's
if
some,
they can support this.
No. And I mean, it's just not defensible to conflate a country's right to exist with their right to terrorize another people. And that goes both ways. I mean, you could apply that to Hamas, you know, but you can't. If you criticize Netanyahu and his grotesque annihilation here, then you're accused of saying that Israel doesn't have a right to exist. There's two different ideas.
Well, I mean, you could turn that on its head and say that this particular Israeli administration is doing exactly what Hitler's accused of doing. Exactly the same. They've already had them in the concentration camp for a long, long time, and now they're flattening it, with them still in it. You know, there's no difference between that, gas chambers, or whatever you want to say happened in Germany, or Austria and Poland and all these places. This is no different. Just you're using a different methodology. Probably a lot quicker, right? Just flatten the place and bomb them and starve them. That'll do the job. You know,
no,
it's... disgusting.
It is disgusting.
And anybody who defends it, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say about them. They're inhuman. They have no humanity in them. People say that Israel's entitled to revenge. Well, you know, admittedly, from their own IDF officers, they admit that they shot their own people on October 7th. You know, what are we defending here? People who are prepared to shoot their own people and blame it on somebody else, even when they admit it. As you say, it's indefensible.
It is.
You know, it doesn't matter what you think about the right to exist or not. What they're doing is indefensible.
Because we're in this voting season, which is just so boring and disgusting at the same time, we're surrounded by nonstop, ceaseless propaganda. And mm-hmm. it's amazing to me how effective this is on people's minds. They can't get past that propaganda. They go to the voting poll and they actively participate in selecting corrupt, bought-off, low-level politicians who are just puppets. And meanwhile, this goes on, and whoever you vote for is going to support this. In the U.S., there's no candidate who's going to... They may give, you know, depending on who their audience is, they may give lip service to, oh, well, we're going to, you know, make sure that we have peace talks and there's a ceasefire.
Right. Yeah, well, you've got the likes of Antifa waving Palestine flags. Now, who wants to support Antifa, right?
Exactly.
They've hijacked that. Mm-hmm. For their own political ends, and to stigmatize Palestinians as if they're like them.
Exactly.
When they're far from it. You know, I remember a guy I used to play soccer with in Ireland, and just a slight change of subject, and he'd done a lot of traveling when he was young. I think he came from a fairly wealthy family, and he just took a couple of years out and did a bit of traveling. He said that the best country he'd ever visited, and he traveled quite a bit of the world, was Afghanistan. He said, you'll never meet friendlier people in the world than them. And this is pre-Taliban days. But, you know, I've heard the same things said about Palestinians and other Middle Eastern countries. And I've travelled around myself, and I've had no problem with them. I've been to mosques in England and talking to them, trying to show them stuff that they're getting the blame for, which they clearly didn't do. And they're not allowed to talk about it. They're told by their mullahs that they're not allowed to talk about this stuff. So they know. Again, they're obviously... controlled as well, but I don't know how much longer you can talk about this stuff, and it's nothing's happening, nobody's prepared to do anything about it. It's strange how the International Court of Justice will America in particular, Britain and all the major nations will say yeah, Putin's a terrorist, yes, well, what a great decision, but when it's turned on Netanyahu, oh no, that's a rubbish organisation, it's got no credibility. Mm-hmm. The hypocrisy is astounding. It's only valid when it suits your purpose, but if it goes against something that you're pushing, oh no, it's got no power, it's got no teeth, doesn't matter, it's irrelevant.
So will
they suddenly declare that Putin isn't a terrorist now because it's irrelevant, right? No, they'll stick with that narrative. And as you say, people voting for the lesser of two evils, which so fully admit themselves, know that these politicians are corrupt to the core, they're depraved, they're perverts, they're pedophiles, they all know this stuff, and they still go to the polling booth. It's incredible. What a job's been done on people.
Absolutely. And see, one thing that Alan pointed out time after time is that the people who are living on their programming, their indoctrination, they're not thinking rationally. And they are, whatever the propaganda is that steers them in one direction one day can seamlessly, to take a word from that vaccine propaganda, seamlessly move them in a completely different direction almost the next day. It's really that effective, and it's that quick.
Well,
I was talking to somebody recently who is not an Alan listener, that, you know, I do, but they seem to think that they're awake to a lot of what's going on in the world. And I was saying, well, you know, Iran is on the list. They didn't know what the list was. And I said, well, you know, we're constantly getting propaganda that, you know, bad Iran, bad Iran. I said, you look at any entertainment, you listen to any mainstream news, and you're going to hear that we've got to take out Iran. And Iran's always behind everything. And I said, you know, it's sad because this is a cradle of civilization. This is an ancient civilization. And we make it out to be, you know, barbarians. This person looked at me completely with a blank look and said, "A cradle of civilization?" I said, "Well, yes." I said, "This is Persia."
They were doing eye surgery. They were doing eye surgery. Most of Europe is still living in caves.
Yes.
People have no idea. People think it's just this place just sprung up suddenly after the First World War or something.
Yes. It's astonishing to me. No, they don't. And, you know, sometimes I need to check out. It's been a while since I wanted to check out with a mindless movie, probably several months. But a couple of nights ago, I decided, I got to check out. And I watched a movie. I think it was called The United. It's really stupid. It's like James Bond meets Mission Impossible. But I always look for the most mindless thing. And sure enough, I'm watching it, and they're talking about these terrorists that have gotten a hold of a list of all of the good guys, you know, all your local police force and your military and your agents and everything who are embedded, and they're gonna go after their families, or they've got their where they live, and they're coming after them, and you know, it's like that. And it said, "Well, we know we've got a list of who are the buyers for this. You know, the terrorist bad guys. There is the Chinese, the North Koreans, the Syrians." The Russians, of course, and Iceland. And Wahlberg, the actor, said, "Iceland?" And the guy said, "Just kidding, it's Iran. It's always Iran." And this is what you get relentlessly, whether it's mainstream news, which is just a different form of entertainment, or a movie. It's always Iran.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think that's where Netanyahu wants this on his watch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's actually a good movie. I read the book originally, and it's called The Physician. And it was made in 2013, and it's about doctors in Persia back in the day. It shows you how far advanced they were back then. They were doing dissections and all that kind of thing, which was kind of taboo, but they realized that they had to get inside the body to find out how it worked. It's supposed to be set in the 11th century. It's Ben Kingsley and another couple of well-known actors. But it's a good movie. I'll
keep an eye out for that one. Yeah, I'll keep an eye out.
Yeah,
see people, I mean, I've just now gone to Wiki, and it talks about, you know, Alexander the Great is over there. Da, da, da. Ancient Iran saw some of the earliest developments of writing, agriculture, urbanization, religion, and central government. Muslims conquered the region in the 7th century AD, leading to Iran's Islamization. The blossoming literature, philosophy, mathematics, medicine, astronomy, and art became major elements for Iranian civilization during the Islamic Golden Age.
Well, yeah, they were ahead of the Greeks.
Yeah.
And the Romans. But, I think a lot of their stuff was taken when the Persian Empire was finally defeated. And a lot of that technology, as it should be termed, all the technology that they discovered themselves, was taken from them. Mm-hmm. I'd probably a lot of it covered up.
Yeah. Well, I'll see that movie. But anyway, that was a good sideline. I put a plug in, and I'm not supporting terrorism wherever it springs from. But we've had a, you know, Hollywood has demonized this region because they're on the list.
Well, I mean, it's basically people will have you believe that everybody from the Middle East must be a terrorist. You know, every country in the Middle East must be terrorist, unless it's Saudi Arabia. And of course, we're told the vast majority of the so-called hijackers on 9/11 were from Saudi Arabia. So, you know, there's cognitive dissonance somewhere there. We didn't bomb that place because you don't want to bomb your allies, do you? Well, maybe you do sometimes. maybe Israel bombing the Liberty. Yeah, there's bombing your allies. I found out that, what was I listening to the other day? No, I can't remember. Rahm Emanuel's father was in the Irgun, responsible for bombing the King David Hotel. Another false flag attack.
Yes,
yeah. And the first three proscribed terrorist organisations by the United Nations were all Israeli. The Irgun, the Hamada, and the Stern Gang, mm-hmm. the three of them, I think, mm-hmm. all proscribed as terrorist organisations, and the IDF came out of all three of them when they amalgamated. So you've now got three terrorist gangs being put into one terrorist gang. And the evidence is pretty self-evident, I would say, that that's exactly what they are. And when you can openly bomb a foreign country to say you went after a Hamas leader and get away with it, there's something wrong with the world. There's something wrong. If that had been, let's just say this was possible, right? An Iranian fired a missile into Washington DC to kill an American spy, Iran would be flattened overnight, because that would be an act of terror, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not when Israel does it. Not when Israel attacks foreign countries, which they do on a consistent basis. That's somehow justifiable, because they're looking for some person, you know, one individual. I mean, the movie Munich, I mean, they got away with that.
Oh, I know the story. I couldn't watch that movie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but they got away with that.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can get away with that kind of global terrorism, which is what it was.
Yeah.
You know, sent out assassins all over the world to kill people. They just put on a list, and most of those people were innocent of anything. They just had the wrong colour skin or the wrong language or whatever it was. But it's a very, very similar scenario to October 7th, right? Mm-hmm. Apparently hijackers go to the Munich Olympics and do this, that and the next thing, and all of a sudden it gives them the rationale to go out and butcher people all over the world.
So I find that family, I know this is a little bit of a digression here, but I find the family that you mentioned, Rahm Emanuel's father was Irgun Zionist paramilitary, and the mm-hmm. where the IDF comes from. So you've got Rahm Emanuel, he's basically the puppeteer for Obama.
Yep, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah. And then you've got his brother Ari, who was one of the most powerful Hollywood agents. Mm-hmm. And there's a third brother, don't remember his first name, but he's an oncologist and a bioethicist. Bioethicist a new word for?
Eugenics.
And what did he do? He was on the COVID-19 advisory board.
Oh, yeah. Just what you use, isn't it? A eugenicist on a board like that, isn't it? Uh-huh. I wonder what their ethos is. I mean, eugenicists want to kill people, right? So why would he be there?
It's just disgusting.
Okay, we'll get away from Israel for a little bit. We'll move on to this one, because this kind of links in with the health stuff. Gobsmacked. This is from Ireland. HSE, that's the health service executive, I think it is, in Ireland, does not know outcome of probe into almost 500 baby deaths and injuries. Maybe the shots had something to do with that. But they're baffled, of course, baffled. Advocates for improved maternity services to say they are gobsmacked. For anybody who's not familiar with Irish slang, that means they're amazed that the HSE does not know the outcomes of the cases. So the health service doesn't know why all these babies die. So they just have no idea. What could possibly have caused that? Well, we don't know. We don't know. We'll leave it at that, right? No mandatory requirement on hospitals to report the outcomes. So, I mean, they could have just simply murdered these babies to harvest their organs, but there's no mandatory requirement on hospitals to report the outcomes to the central government. So they could do anything they want with babies. They could have a perfectly normal birth, right? And the mother's lying there. She's oh, we've got to take your baby away for his, what do they call it, his potassium injection. Or he died. Mm. You know. Or they just tell the mother it was a stillbirth. Take the child away perfectly well. Okay, who have we got for this one? Oh, somebody in Europe wants a kidney for their newborn baby or something. You know, here we've got one. We've got a match here. I mean, is that what they're pricking the heel for as soon as they're born?
Well, I mean, this is very macabre, but...
I think that's the world we live in, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a sick baby, you need baby organs to replace them because you can't put an adult in there.
Absolutely.
And if you've got the money to pay for it, you'll get what you want.
Yeah. But again, you've got a disconnect with people's thinking. Just we go back to that first article that we started with and how they're telling us that this vaccine identification card is absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. Electronic vaccination card, whatever it is, the EVC, because it's absolutely necessary to know everything about you, cradle to grave, and your health status. Well, we put that side by side with 500 babies.
Yeah, what they're actually telling you is that they do not trust you.
Yeah.
Now, if you go somewhere and they say, "Have you had any vaccinations?" You go, "Yeah." Well, okay, I've told you I've had them. What's your problem? Don't you trust me? You call me a liar? Put that in writing, I'll sue you. You know, there's no... The public cannot be trusted, but we're supposed to trust the politicians, right? Because they're looking after us, they're keeping us safe. And then, in the next breath, they'll tell you the world's never been so unsafe as it is now. Well, who caused that problem? You know, the government will tell you, well, we've got to protect you from those nasty Chinese governments over there, and the Russian government and whoever else. And the Russian government, the Chinese government's telling their people, we've got to protect you from those nasty Americans, these nasty British folk, those nasty Germans. Mm-hmm. No, what they're telling you is, we have to protect you against the other government. Right? It's not the people. People have got nothing to do with it.
Right.
So the problem's the government, right? The governments are the problems. They're the ones causing all the problems.
Oh, that's a good segue into your song that you just released with Paul Angry North and Boris's Bitches is entitled...
Yeah, well, I'd rather say Paul released it. Paul released it.
Okay.
I just sang it. Yeah.
Well, you did the lead vocals on Paul's new song, Your Government Is Your Enemy.
Is your enemy. Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to plug that in for a listen, and I'll tell you, before you listen to this, there's a profanity warning, so you've been warned.
It's only one word right at the start, the second line, actually.
Choose your color, tick a box. Which puppet bucks you off? Illusion stronger than an ox. You're dead easy to outbox. Thinking hair, screwing blocks. Not the sharpest in the box. So game, it never stops. This old penny never drops. But your government is your enemy. Your government is your enemy. Your government is your enemy. Your government. Abundant plans and endless plots. The slaves in their box.
brass and steel, they fight lots. They'll take things you've not yet got. Pay the nurses, bought the docks. To shoot you down with poison shots. And fill your body full of flops. But you won't look to join the dots. Your government is your enemy. Your government is your enemy. Your government is your enemy. Your government is your enemy that you never see. Little hue or red or blue. Or super sucker green for you. With parties only one thing's true. Hard while shouting you A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. Your government is your enemy. 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 Is your enemy.
So, and you said that you've written lyrics on some things that are in the works right now. Is that right?
Yeah. The next one should be, it's called We Love Eugenics. It's called, it's We Love You, Y-O-U, with Genics on it. Because the government loves you, right?
Uh-huh.
I did some lyrics and we'd got a kind of rough copy done. I've had to record in the car. I've been taking the dog out in the morning early and I've been going sitting in the parking lot with my mic and my computer and trying to record it in the car because I can't get any peace and quiet in the house because the dogs are either walking about in the house above me when I'm in the basement or the autistic lads running around making a noise or whatever. So I started doing it in the car. Then we had a few days of rain, so I couldn't do it in the car because it was like on top of the car. So I couldn't do that. And then Paul was on holiday for a week and I was trying to get it done then, but I had rain. And then this week I've had hay fever, so I've not been doing that either. So, but yeah, we'll get onto it. Let's try and get out. And then we've got another one, well, human mutilation industry, which is about obviously the transgender thing. Mm. And there's I've written quite a few lyrics, and Paul's coming up with another song. That one there, he just came up with that one. And he says, oh, this will be easy to do because there's not an awful lot of musical stuff I have to do to it. And so that came out pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And some of the other ones are a bit more tricky, but yeah. I'm not used to singing, so I'm kind of still learning how I want to sing things. I'm actually learning that I can sing the same word in two different songs, but it just sounds terrible in one and good in the other. Just depends on what the lyrics are like, what the melody's like. Uh-huh. So I have to look at what I'm writing and think, can I actually sing that way before I actually try it.
Well, you did a good job on the vocals of this, of Your Government is Your Enemy. I enjoyed it.
It came out okay. I'm happy with it. Mm. Paul's happy with it. So, yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what listeners think of it. Always good to get a bit of feedback. So, anyway, what we got now? We've got the New Zealand pandemic plan, but it's 292 pages, or 219 pages. I haven't read through it, but apparently it's quite horrific. In terms of locking everybody down and et cetera, mandatory vaccinations, blah, 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 it's all in there. But we'll maybe save that for next time. Then another situation in Ireland, of course, 290 or 260? A population in a village in Ireland, in Tipperary, 165 is the population of the village, and they're going to put 260 in there. In a hotel. All single men. Young single men. And they actually admit it. Young single men. But if you complain about it, you're xenophobic and you're overinflating things and it's just not what it seems at all. We're just looking after these people. Now, if I'm a young fighting age young man, I'd be staying in my own country to do some fighting if I was under some risk, especially when there seems to be hundreds of thousands of you fleeing your countries. These aren't people running away from a war zone.
No.
Quite clearly. Some of the videos that are coming out, they've got some of them actually patrolling outside the grounds. These guys are clearly military. You can see with their stature, their build, their manner. These are not ordinary guys escaping a war zone. The ones you're seeing out in the streets running about are probably the dregs that are, they've let out the prisons or something over there. And say, oh, you want to get out of prison? Okay, you've got to go to Ireland and create some mayhem for us. Because that's the ones that people are focusing on, because that's the ones that are most visible. Mm-hmm. These ones that are in the hotels and everything, nobody's getting to see these guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're kept within the confines of those places. They're not wandering around the place. The ones in the hotels in the inner cities are getting to go out and causing mayhem in the streets, public drunkenness and all that sort of thing. You know, the kind of stuff they ran away from. They couldn't get drunk in public. That's more like what they ran away from. But they can't get drunk in public in Ireland either, but the cops seem to turn a blind eye to it. You can't actually drink at all on the street in Ireland. Unless it's some kind of festival that's going on and they get a special permit to do that. Same in the UK, you're not allowed to drink in public. Unless it's within the confines of a licensed event.
Know that the scandals that came out around the grooming gangs, and that's just the most horrific example, but the police said we can't even address this for fear of being called racist, you know, Islamophobes.
No, but if an Irish guy goes out and rapes somebody, they're quick enough to name him as an Irish man of such and such an age. Well, that's, by the same logic, that's racism.
Yeah.
Regardless of it, if it's an Irish correspondent reporting it, it's still racism.
Yeah.
So it's rubbish.
Yeah. One, I mean, since we're over here in racism, one that you sent me that is just ridiculous is the NHS staff.
Yeah.
People, this is from Sky News. It said UK riots. People who are racist to NHS staff can and should be refused care, Health Secretary says. After two Filipino nurses were attacked during unrest in Sunderland, the health secretary says anyone being racist to NHS staff can expect to be turned away. The pair were said to be terrified after the ordeal. Now, first of all, we don't know that happened. You know,
nope.
It's so hard to verify any of this unless you're on the ground. It's just a...
Also, they don't define what racism is. Does that mean... If somebody of an immigrant background comes in and abuses a white nurse, are they going to be treated the same way? Because the assumption is that this is foreigners being abused by local people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the inference. They're not saying it happens the other way around.
It doesn't say what happened. It calls it far right violence, which is a terrible. Characterization, but it's to be expected.
Define violence.
Well, and it's also, too, I mean, I can't stand to see people get caught up in this. I wish they would take their rage and direct it at their politicians.
Well, you know that these riots in England are orchestrated by the powers that be.
Yes,
when that's exactly
yes,
what happens, they
yeah.
are not going at the right target.
No, they're not.
They need to be hundreds of thousands of people surrounding Parliament and saying, get your act together or we're coming in and we're going to drag you out in the street and sort you out.
So we don't know. I mean, this is what you know, journalism is now. It's just handouts. It's just probably computer generated handouts. So we don't know what happened to these Filipino nurses. It said they were attacked. We have no idea by whom, what constitutes an attack. So as they traveled to work for emergency cover during unrest in Sunderland. Okay.
The question is, why are there Filipino nurses in English hospitals? There's plenty of other people out there that could do that job. Plenty of young English people who want to get into nursing who can't because they're bringing the cheap labour from abroad. But half of these people in these hospitals can't speak English. Is it any wonder that if you go in there injured and they can't understand what you're saying, you're going to get upset, especially if you're in pain? Now you could be in agony, and people say the most horrendous things when they're hurt. And if somebody's just going, what, I don't understand you, whatever, I think you're going to get pretty upset.
Well, I mean, that's the thing.
Just my likelihood.
I remember being in sitting in a clinic with Alan, who was waiting to see a doctor. And I noticed on the wall there's a huge sign that said, "We will not tolerate verbal abuse," you know. And I've seen that since at various doctors' offices and clinics. We will not tolerate verbal abuse. So they're laying it out there. But that's not what this story is. These Filipino nurses, it says, were attacked on Friday night as they traveled to work.
Yeah, they're not even in the hospital.
They're not even in the hospital. But this minister has come out and said, well, we'll deny you care. So if you offend a person, a foreign person, say in line at the grocery store, who happens to work for the NHS, can you be denied health care?
You'll be arrested before you get to the hospital. because you can do that on the... You get arrested for making remarks on Facebook now, which are perfectly rational remarks, but they're deemed as I say, defined racism. You know, somebody says, I'm not happy having all these foreigners coming into my country because it's causing the infrastructure to collapse. It's causing that. Oh, you're arrested. That's racist. You know, perfectly rational statements people are now being stigmatized for and, arrested and put in prison for. And yet, you know, you can have all sorts of violence going on the streets, and depending on what colour your skin is, you're treated differently. The two-tier policing system is definitely in play all across Europe.
Now,
You can even be arrested if you're actually standing just watching and filming what's going on. You're not even taking part in any rioting. You can actually be arrested for that now as well. In a public place. You're filming in a public place, which is perfectly legal. You'd imagine going to court with that, right? And the judge goes, what were you doing? So I was filming this as evidence for the police. I was going to hand this evidence into the police if there was anything on it that I thought they might be interested in. They're going to jail you for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? One of the documents that I think I sent you, I can't get this stuff up now, all these tabs have gone. It was to do with legislation that the UK was bringing in. And every instance that they mentioned what was a crime, it was if he does this, or he does that, or he does this. And I thought, well, you know, once you go to court, just say I identify as a woman, so it couldn't possibly mean me. Because the word should be they. If we're talking about pronouns, when they're writing that legislation, that word should be they, so it covers male or female.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it he? Now, lawyers write this stuff. They must understand that that doesn't make any sense.
I don't have that one up either, but yeah. Okay, so now, this particular story that you sent me is an employee of the DWP, which is the Department for Work and Pensions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the NHS, but it's still a public servant, right? A civil service servant. Transgender civil servant sparks uproar after colleagues complain that she, okay, we're being screwed with already, she wears fetish gear, including fishnet tights, low-cut corsets, and chokers into the office.
Yeah.
A government department is embroiled in a peculiar row over whether staff can wear fetish gear to work following complaints from civil servants about a transgender colleague. Now just think about this. This is this trans person's co-workers who are complaining. It says this person...
So they're offended.
Yes. They've previously come under fire for saying that trans children's demands for puberty blockers should take precedence over their parents' will. Okay? So this is a person who is a danger to your children. And
correct.
If you go into the Department of Public Works and have a bad reaction to this person, can you imagine the comeback that you're going to get?
Yeah. Well, as I say, I mean, if somebody wants to come in, a man wants to come in looking like a female whore, I'm offended. So where's my right to redress on that?
You're not going to have it. I mean, if we're seeing any kind of precedence that carries over from one insane diktat to another, then if you offend this person out and about, you could be denied services at the Department of Public Works and Pensions.
The NHS.
Yeah.
The NHS.
Well, yeah.
But all you have to do is call this person what he is, a man.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's it.
That's bigotry, right?
Yeah.
Or transphobia, your irrational fear. If you were irrationally fearful of this guy, you wouldn't call him he, would you? You'd be, oh, I better call it she, because I'm really scared.
Ah.
You know? But now, if one of the co-workers turned up, a female turned up wearing this stuff, see-through clothing and all the rest of it, she'd be told to go home and put some clothes on.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. But you would have thought the civil service would have a dress code, wouldn't you?
I would have thought so, yeah.
But again, that's been kind of done away with. They have these, I can't really call it, Freedom Friday or something, you can wear what you want type of thing. And you'll get these creeps taking advantage of that. But why would you want to do this? Why would you want... You're clearly mentally ill if you think this is going to get you up the career ladder, right? But maybe it is. Who knows? Maybe it is going to get him a better job. You know, because he's part of the DEI recruitment policy. Maybe they just need one in there, you know? Maybe he'll be the chairman of the board at some place. Or he'll get the top job in that department.
Well, it's actually one of those things, if you had time that you could follow it, this would be an interesting one. This is from this is called Civil Service LGBT Plus Network. So I don't think it's an official site, but it's something that the LGBTQ in the UK are involved in. So this is this person's bio. He is the chair of the Civil Service LGBT. One of the two co-chairs of the Civil Service LGBT Plus Network. I work within the DWP and have done throughout my long civil service career. Throughout my time, I've been actively involved in D&I, I don't know what that is, at various points, chairing both the JCP and the DWP gender networks. See, this is where your tax dollars go to. And if you pick up any rock, if you look under any rock, you're going to find it. So if you're still voting for this, so your Department of Works and Pensions has gender networks. This person helped to set up their first transgender network through that role. And most recently, he has been the national co-chair of the DWP Pride. So this is what your tax money funds. Your civil servants are probably, I mean, this is, you know, works and pension. So you decide that it's time for you to file for your pension, and then you find out, you know, you've got to triplicate sign 52 documents, et cetera, et cetera, and wait weeks or months for something to kick into gear. Why? Why? It's because they're too busy doing their gender department and their pride department and fighting about what they can and cannot wear to work. They're not there to help you.
No. This is also the department that deals with your benefits as well. Your dole money and all the rest of it. So you turn up to a counter and you've got this creature sitting behind the counter and you laugh or something. Go, what are you doing, man? You know? That's it. You've insulted me. We're just stopping your dole money. You know, we'll stop your housing benefit, whatever it is.
Yes.
You know, and maybe that's why they put them out there and cut down on costs so they can spend it on themselves. The amount of money, you know, people talk about the cost of living crisis. No, it's a taxation crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a taxation crisis. Your money's been stolen and given to these mentally ill people who think that this is perfectly natural and that we should all just accept it. We don't have to accept anything. It's nothing to do with transphobia or anything or being inclusive. No, if I don't like something, I don't like it. That's human nature. That's the way it is. And if people don't like that, then that's tough. I don't care. I don't expect people to like me. If they do like me, fine. If they don't, I don't care. If they want to insult me, I don't care. I'm not easily offended, you know, but I'm offended by this type of thing. It's anti-human. That's the only way I can describe it. It's totally anti-human.
I was trying to make a point in the Redux that I put up yesterday. I don't know how well I made the point, but the idea that all of our institutions have been taken over for such a long time, it is naive to think that we can vote our way out of this system. And what I was bringing us back to is the idea of foundations, their power and influence, and how long they have had control of the universities. And it's the universities who spit out the civil servants, the politicians, the academics, et cetera, et cetera. So here I am. I just want to keep going with this transgender person. I don't know how you can help me out. I think this is an Irish name. S-A-O-R-S-A.
Saoirse
Tweedle has built a career. Okay, so Saoirse was just awarded an honorary degree by the University of Bradford. I'll be sure to include this picture in the illustration because it's kind of frightening.
Yeah.
The 58-year-old...
Yeah, she should have actually earned it. She should have actually earned it because she's entitled to it, right?
Right, right. It's an honorary. 58-year-old civil servant is currently Yorkshire and Humber Regional Chair for the... Okay, we've gone over that, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to correct this writing here. They attended the University of Bradford from 1993 to 95, where they completed a master's in politics of visual representation. Okay, first of all, you can get a master's degree in the politics of visual representation. That was 30 years ago.
In other words, how to change people's perceptions.
Mm-hmm. So this was 30 years ago. They got a degree in this. Focusing on social constructions of sex and gender in the 18th century. So voters who send their children to universities worldwide, this is what you're sending your children to. And I want to tell you something, a story about someone who contacted Alan years ago, was new to his work and devastated because they had sent their daughter to university, a bright woman, bright young woman. And they sent Alan a picture of their daughter, and she was a pretty young woman. And they were heartbroken because she'd gotten to university, and within about a year, her personality had changed. She started dating a man, and I think before the, even the third year of university, had decided to marry this young man. At the same time that she underwent the beginning of hormone therapy and gender reassignment surgery. So she had a double mastectomy and had her breasts removed. And this woman, this listener, was just devastated by this. They were preparing for the wedding plans, and the listener said, she is marrying the son of high-level employees at the CDC. And their other son is transitioning male to female. So just absorb this. This is who we're run by. And this was before the COVID operation. This was some years back. High-level employees of the CDC have a son who's going to marry a young woman who's becoming a man, in as much as that can be achieved. And his brother is becoming a woman, in as much as that can be achieved. Yeah. This is what academia does to people's heads. It's a dangerous world.
Yeah, people out there in the so-called conservative alternative media will try and convince you that it's all China and Russia that's doing it. You know, it's all Chinese infiltration, it's Russian, it's the Iranians, it's this, that, next thing. No, look in your own backyard.
Absolutely.
It's so basic propaganda. Don't look at us, look at them over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's how basic it is. We'll just distract yourself by looking at those horrible, nasty people over there on the other side of the fence. Don't look in your own government. Look at them. Look at that nasty government over there, because we would never do nasty things to them.
No. And it's easy.
I'm sick of hearing people say that, this Iranian attacked this guy and da-da-da-da-da, they assassinated this person, that person. America's been blowing people to pieces in hundreds of thousands for the last 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for no reason whatsoever other than one they constructed themselves. So who's the bad guy here? Well, they're all bad guys because they're all working together. None of the leaders get killed. None of the Houses of Parliament or the Congress get bombed. None of the Israeli institutions get bombed by these so-called terrorists that run amok everywhere. You know, none of the royal families' places are bombed. None of that stuff. The wrong targets are always attacked. Ordinary people on the street to set them against each other. That's all it's about. Divide and conquer, divide and conquer, divide and conquer. And we're now down to, you know, divide and conquer between men and women, and now it's not even men and women because you're not allowed to tell the difference. They're divided men and women so much that they're now trying to stick them together as one thing. And that's an androgynous, sick, mentally ill Frankenstein monster. So we should all support that, right? Because we're all one. No, we shouldn't support any of it by voting for any of it.
No. And until people can understand that this is so far above your elected officials and really see the root cause of it. I mean, that's not to say that, you know, elected officials shouldn't be called out on what they're doing and participating in. But the first call out is to stop participating by choosing the lesser of two evils. You have to opt out of this altogether.
Well, people should also recognize that what we've now got is a government that controls the police forces. Now, the police forces were supposed to be independent of government.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Because that was the safety net for the public. The only societies we ever heard about where the police were in cahoots with government were always totalitarian.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't people recognise that's exactly mm-hmm. what we've got now?
Mm-hmm.
If the police were actually doing their job, these politicians giving these orders, we'd be arrested.
Just look at any riot, whether it's, you know, something in the U.S. or the U.K. or France or Germany. Just look at any riot anywhere or protest or peaceful protest. And what do you see? You see the police usually in helmets that cover their entire face with their riot gear, their big shields. You think these people, tasers, batons, guns, you think that these gas. People are your employees?
Clearly not. If those guys weren't there, what defense would the government have? They're the government's private army, mm-hmm. is what they are. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what government's in. It doesn't matter if it's Alistair, what's the comedian guy, whether you're wearing the red tie or the blue tie. Doesn't matter. These are establishment forces, shall we call them? Because the establishment runs through the government. The establishment is not the government. The establishment's the ones above the government, or the first rung of the ladder above government, shall we say? And then that establishment is run by people way up the ladder from there. And nothing in this world can be done without people in very, very high places giving orders to the government, who give orders to the cops to keep you under control. Because the public, if they were any ways rational or reasonable or just screwed their head on, would realise it's what's been done to them. But they don't. They seem blind to it. And then the goons will be sent out, the rent-a-mob will be sent out, and then new laws will come in whereby you're never going to be allowed to go out and protest. But that's coming as well, clearly. You can't even do it online. You can't even have an opinion now. But there's somebody going to knock on your door and arrest you. Mm-hmm. Which tells you, you cannot have... They say that we're anonymous online, right? And that's why they need to bring in stricter controls for ID online and all this. But, well, how come you can allegedly make an anonymous post on Facebook now and that the cops are at your door 10 minutes later telling you you're under arrest? You're clearly not anonymous.
There's something else about these, whether they call them riots or protests, but there's something else about these that people need to consider. I don't know the laws in the UK, but I'm guessing that it's pretty similar to what you have in the US and Canada, which is you can't actually protest or riot unless you've had a permit.
Yeah.
You have to have permission to do it. And this is going way back. I mean, Alan made that illustration of one of the, was it G20 or there was some WTO, I don't remember what it was, but this was in Canada a decade and a half ago probably. And all of the protesters were blocks away from the activity behind a chain link fence that had been set up. With their permit to do this, anywhere you see people who are protesting, someone has had a permission slip to do that. And if they didn't, all of those people would be and could be, and you better believe they would be, arrested straight away, period.
Yeah. So it's not a protest?
No.
It can't in any way. A protest is something that happens spontaneously.
Yes. So what you're seeing is authorized, and it's a particular type of theater for demoralization.
Mm-hmm. You're putting your pen. You're the sheep putting the pen mm-hmm. in your free speech zone. Mm-hmm. Your free which you don't have anymore.
No.
Because I guarantee if you're in that free speech zone and you shout something at somebody and they say, "Oh, that offended me," they're going to come into your free speech zone and arrest you anyway.
That's right.
I've mentioned before at Bilderberg. We were put into this fenced-off place to look mm-hmm. at the hotel on the hill, you know, and people were waving placards at cars and stuff like that, thinking that was going to change anything.
Yeah.
Well, they sneaked most of the nasty people in the back door. Nobody saw them.
Yeah. It's just...
The only thing... It's been said by many, many people. It's just total non-compliance with anything. Just go about your business and just ignore everything that comes your way. Out of government. If everybody gets rid of the phone, this is over. They can't control people without that phone at the moment, but maybe that'll change. maybe what they're doing with these shots will change that. Maybe they see that down the line, that maybe they don't want people having these phones eventually, because they might be able to talk to each other. I don't know. They don't want you communicating, that's for sure. You just mentioned Canada there, and of course the Canadian government is now warning the country to prepare for a new virus far worse than COVID. That was on the 14th of August. So they're right up front
that.
Again in their move towards Germany.
I saw that, and I'm not sure where I picked it up. I think it might have been the Irish Sentinel, but that was a weird story, and I actually ended up covering it in the Redux yesterday because the story is actually circulating around by being aggregated by Microsoft. And it credits it as being a three-day-old story from the Daily Mail. But when you go to get it live at the Daily Mail, it doesn't exist there. You can't pull it up.
Well, I've got it here.
Well, I'd like to see it, because if you've got the original, because what I saw was a mix of old information from 4 years ago mixed in with the new document that they were citing from Canada. Which is
This is published 14th of August, updated 15th of August.
Okay, well, send me that one because I want to take a look at that carefully.
There's a handbook, the infectious flu and infectious disease outbreaks and business continuity plan handbook.
I pulled that up. I have that.
Yeah, but it's a hypothetical virus, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like COVID, right? Just it's hypothetical. Just in case this happens, we've got to do this.
Right.
And look where that goes. Just touching on all the single fighting age young men moving into Ireland, they've now given $8.6 million to the Irish Defence Forces to build a communications facility. I did ask somebody recently, and I mentioned this to you, about the, you know, when they say, oh, the bad guys were the Germans, da da da, and all this kind of thing. And I'm sure they were on many occasions. But the notorious Rhein-Wiesenlager camps, which were set up after the war, and by all accounts, not this one, this is saying thousands of Germans died, it was in the millions. They were just starved to death, basically, in the open air, and guarded by American troops, who weren't allowed to feed them or talk to them or anything. As people say, there are no good guys anywhere. Doesn't matter what side you're on, there are no good guys anywhere. And I think that goes back to the governments. I don't think there are any good governments. And if there are some out there, or well out there, you know they were decent in some way because they're getting bombed. They're not going along with the plan fully. Maybe they are in some part, but maybe not enough for their masters.
Or
maybe they just got a conscience.
It really comes back to the most simplistic kind of propaganda. And I think this is, I can actually understand why it works, because we have a short lifespan and it's hard for us to step outside that view of our short lifespan and look at long-term plans that they may have for a region or something. And so you love the country because you're born there and you're told these are your people and this is your country, and now your country's under threat. Usually it's under threat because of something your government has done to you. Take Ireland. You know, the government's policy is bringing in these fighting age men who are causing havoc. Even if they're not doing anything, their presence is causing havoc because the Irish people don't understand and they don't like what is happening to them.
Well, when you're in a village of 165 people, that's including old men, middle-aged men and women, children, 165 in total. And obviously I lived in Ireland, I know what these villages look like. It's one street in, one street out. It's what they call a one-horse town kind of thing. And there's no big supermarkets there, there's no little convenience stores. You know, corner shops, butchers, whatever. And to bring in 260 young men, if people think that's just to help refugees, they're out of their minds.
No.
All these people that say, yeah, all refugees welcome, okay, we'll put them in your village. Oh, no, we don't have space for them.
No, it's a complete...
Put them in that village over there.
It's a complete displacement, replacement. But again, the war is on you, but people can't see that. they will point the finger at what they're being flooded, who they're being flooded with, instead of saying, why is my government doing this? And then nobody takes the time to inquire about that. And it's just too easy to manipulate people on the political, nationalistic level. And so, you know, unfortunately, it's easy and it can be done over and over and over again. And wars are never about protecting your way of life or your country. It's always resource acquisition and long-term geopolitical plans. It's not
Chinese and Russia bombing the Middle East.
No.
So, you know, for people to suggest that all these refugees are coming because of China and Russia,
yeah,
is just absurd.
Yeah. I know.
They're not coming because they're fleeing. They're coming because they've been shipped. You can't move that amount of people without coordination and planning.
Neil, don't you know that it's Russia who's funding Iran?
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is.
Yeah.
It's absurd. The global bankers are funding everybody in one way or another.
Absolutely.
All sides, as they always do. And they pay the propaganda on both sides too. They pay for that. Pay for everything. You know, and you hear people say, oh, but what? Why would they need money? Why would all these people need money? Well, they don't need money. You know, money is just a tool to them to like pay for propaganda, to pay for wars. It's not for them. They don't need the money personally.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in life is free for them. I can't see Bill Gates walking in a restaurant and having to put his wallet out. You know, mm-hmm. I don't see that happening. He certainly wouldn't handle cash because that's filthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't hand it to a filthy peasant anyway. He'd probably get somebody else to do it. But anyway.
It reminds me of a line from the old Dad's Army series where one of the officers, the volunteer officers, has a contact there with one of the so-called elites. I think it's a wife of Lord such and such. And when she leaves, somebody said, oh my goodness, why they were almost human. I had no idea they were so lovely. And the commoner said, oh yeah, they're just like us, except for they never pay for anything.
Yeah. Well, that's how they got all that money, right?
Yeah.
They get other people to pay it.
Yeah.
Like Elon Musk, you know. And again, like Elon Musk, he's coming out with all this stuff about civil war happening in Britain, blah, blah, blah. Who gave this guy any credibility to talk for anybody? Who promoted this guy to some demagogue that we should all be listening to?
Well,
he's a guy who's been subsidised. That's how he's got his money. He's not done anything.
No.
He's been given an agenda. Go with the electric cars, go with this, go with that, and here's a load of government taxpayers' money.
No, if you took away government subsidies from his companies, he wouldn't exist.
No, and he wouldn't be on the television telling you how to behave.
No. But who gives him the power? Who puts him up? We do.
The government.
People, no. At the end of the day, it's people who worship power and money. We have been trained to think that these people, as Alan would say, came from special wombs.
Yeah.
And they don't.
And we pay for it.
Yeah.
We give them the wealth.
Yes.
And then we listen to the garbage that comes out of their mouth.
And somehow, you know, Elon Musk is the savior of free speech the world wide over. It's a joke. It's a tragic joke.
Yep. If it was the harbinger of free speech, he'd say, right, I'm going to abolish Twitter. it should be coming out saying, right, we need to abolish all social media and just get back to talking. How about that? Meeting people in real life. That's free speech.
Yeah.
Which I think would be a good idea, get rid of all social media. Completely. If that's a big problem, people are getting too much freedom on the internet through social media, then abolish it. Just say it's harmful to society. We don't need it. What function does it serve?
No. None. He's not even somebody that I can take seriously. It's just...
No, an empty shell is what he is. Yeah. With bagfuls of taxpayers' money.
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, these people... Yeah. And Bill Gates is one of them, too. I mean, when you...
Oh, yeah.
When you really watch them, everything about them, their body language, the words that come out of their mouths, do you really, really believe that these people are running multinational corporations? Do you really buy the genius? I don't.
Well, I don't see anything genius about them.
Mm-mm.
They can't seem to even articulate sentences at some, you know. Even when they've got a script, they can't seem to follow what they're supposed to say. They can't stutter, just like I'm doing now, actually. But I'm just doing this off the top of my head. But they can't seem to make a valid point in one sentence. It's all got to stop, and then they go off on a tangent. They come back, they go off on another tangent, and it's all just a mishmash of phrases and slogans in their minds that they splot out, and you go, it just goes on for like 10 minutes, and you go, what did he say?
Mm-hmm.
What did he say? He didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly didn't answer the question that was put to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, and that's taught. That's taught. They're taught how not to answer the question. It's just like politicians.
You know, years and years ago, one of the first things that Alan sent me to watch, I think it was called Spin. It was a little documentary called Spin. I haven't looked at it in years, but it was exactly that. They're taught how, it even said in there, we don't answer the question that was asked. We answer the question that we wanted them to ask. And so it's an absolute technique of diversionary tactic.
Yeah, look over there, not over here.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, okay, well.
Well, I think we've just about solved all the world's problems.
So, yeah, just get rid of all governments and then we can start
that's
again.
That's it. Your government is your enemy. All right, yeah. Neil, I'll talk to you in a few weeks, and stay cool and look forward to hearing the next songs that you do.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Well, I've got something that the world didn't give me, and the world cannot take it away. And I've got something that the world didn't give me, and the world cannot take it away. Father.